My name is Dr. Beth Trammell, and I'm your host. And I'm a licensed psychologist and an associate professor of psychology at IU East here in Indiana. And I'm also the director of the Master's of Mental Health Counseling Program. If anybody out there wants to become a master's level therapist, would love to have you. So shameless plug for the program. So today, this episode is going to be so important because ADHD is one of the most common disorders that we have in our field. And there are a lot of misconceptions about a lot of things in psychology and in mental health. And for me, ADHD is up there with one of the top disorders or even conditions or acronyms, whatever. So there are so many misconceptions about ADHD. And so I am so excited that my guest is here to talk about this with me, because this episode is really about helping folks understand what they didn't even know they didn't know accurately about ADHD. And so my guest today, Lindsay Webster, is actually an old friend and colleague. She used to be my neighbor before she moved out of the state, which is so fun. Lindsay, thanks for saying yes to being here. Can you introduce yourself to listeners and tell us one fun thing about you?
I can. So I am Lindsay Webster. I am a school psychologist just outside of Richmond, Virginia. I'm passionate about ADHD. I'm an ADHD certified educator. Beth, you were my mentor, my supervisor at one point. And so definitely learned a ton from you throughout the way. I'm working mainly in high schools now and enjoying working with teenagers and really, preparing them for life after they leave our school. Because we're we want to make sure that we are sending them out the door with not just the academic, education that they need, but the, more of those life skills too, that can help them be successful after they leave school, whichever route they choose to go.
It's incredible. And I'm sure that it is becoming more and more apparent that those life skills are just so important to our teens. And not to compare, are they more or less important than the academic skills, but just that they are important for sure.
They really are. And they work together. And especially when we are looking at, the skills that go along with ADHD, certainly you can see how they impact academics and behavior and just life in general, just every piece of it. So it's all important. It's all tied together.
Working with teens and teaching life skills sounds fun. Is that your one fun thing, or do you have another fun thing you want to share?
My one fun thing. I would say the most fun thing in my life right now is I have a puppy. I got a puppy for Mother's Day, a standard poodle puppy. He has become my life. probably to the point where it's a little unhealthy.
What kind of dog is it, you said?
He's a standard poodle. I had always wanted a standard poodle, and my daughter and sister-in-law teamed up together and decided, it had been a rough year, and this is the year they wanted to do that for me. So he's amazing.
That is so fun. So you got a puppy on Mother's Day, and listeners will be shocked to hear that we actually got a puppy mid-July. And I have been a self-proclaimed not dog person. I don't dislike dogs. I just don't feel like I have the emotional energy for dogs when I have four children to love. But we also have a puppy, and I'm not sure that I have the same obsession. I don't know if obsession is what you would say, but I don't think I have that yet. Someone asked me, we brought him to the park, and someone was like, "Oh my gosh, are you just in love right away?" And I'm like, "Well, there's a solid like. It's like I like him. I'm not sure it was like love at first sight though."
Beth, you're looking at this the wrong way, because first of all, you have four kids, so I mean that's understandable. You don't have as much free time as I do, but you have four kids, so your floors can get a little dirty, like crummy, I'm sure. Yeah. And now you have a, kind of self-cleaning.
I've got a walking vacuum. That's what you're saying? That's hysterical. It's hysterical. Hey, look, I, you know, Duke is his name. He's a golden doodle and he is cute as all get out. And that was a requirement for me because he had to be cute for me to even come close to loving him, you know, because I'm just not reinforced that way if they're not at least adorable.
Mine is Benedict. He was actually named after the one of my favorite buildings on my undergraduate college where I took some of my favorite classes. And so when my daughter gave him to me, he already had his name tag.
That's so fun.
Because I've been, you know, thinking about this for a long time. So.
That's so good. Okay. So now that we have gone off on a tangent, it's perfect for us to talk about. It's perfect for us to talk about ADHD. So I want to start with making sure that we clarify what are we talking about here, right? Because I think people have this idea about what they think ADHD is, right? Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. People have this image in their mind. And I think a lot of times the image they have relates to younger, you know, like the first or second or third grade boy who runs around a lot, who crashes things, who, you know, is maybe loud. Like, I think we have a limited view of what ADHD actually is. So can you talk to us a little bit about what, you know, that doesn't mean that 8-year-old boy doesn't have ADHD. I'm not taking that picture away entirely. I'm just saying we need to broaden our view of what ADHD is, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. So there's the 8-year-old boy who's, you know, running all around, but then there's the girl who is, you know, less likely to be hyperactive. She's, you know, maybe more inattentive and might go unnoticed until maybe around middle school. You know, things start getting more challenging, and then, you know, hormones have been shown to play a part in that also. But as far as ADHD, I mean, everything about the name is kind of, you know, in question. Certainly not that the attention isn't a part of it, not that the hyperactivity isn't a part of it, but even down to the disorder part, that too is a little controversial because there are two camps and, you know, people with ADHD, a lot of them think of it as their superpower. And I actually think that's a good place to start with this, to recognize that a lot of people with ADHD have such incredible strengths. And, you know, they are the like out of the box thinkers, you know, constantly brainstorming and coming up with new ways to solve problems and, you know, just innovative and energetic and, you know, all of those great things. And so a lot of people do consider it to be their superpower. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't face struggles also, and they certainly don't deny that. But then there are other people who, you know, find it a lot more challenging to live with on a daily basis because it affects every part of your life, not just the difficulty, like paying attention, you know, obviously the challenges that can go along with that are, you know, kind of obvious. You might, you know, miss things in school or might not be able to sit still in your desk when the teacher's, you know, trying to teach a lesson. And so that's kind of obvious. But when you, especially those young kids who are hearing that, like from like preschool, you know, on, and they're hearing these, maybe not even always intentionally negative comments, but the why aren't you listening? We've been over this. Why aren't you sitting in your seat? And, you know, why can't you do this work when I've explained it 3 times? And so they're hearing that stuff from a very young age on, and it really starts to take a toll because so many of them really are trying and they really, really want to. And the attention piece, I think of that as if you think back to the first time you went to the ocean, maybe as a small child, and you're in the water with your friends and family, and you're, you know, maybe throwing the ball, riding the waves, looking up for jellyfish, and you know, just having a good time. And all of a sudden you'd look and you realize that your towel is way down off to the left, right? And you drifted off and you didn't realize it. And so you get out and you run back to the sand, get back in the water and start playing again. It, you know, happens again. You're not as far down, but you go back, get back in this time. You're like, I'm really determined that I'm not going to go down far. So you're trying to, you know, dig your feet in the water or, you know, in the sand and really try to stay. And you may drift off a little bit, but you're able to catch yourself. And so that's a lot like how I think about this attention, because kids with ADHD really aren't able to, they really want to pay attention. They mean to pay attention, but it is a neurogenetic, you know, deficit. And so they can't, like, unless there's that highly motivating, like we hear a lot about the, you know, video games. Now they're able to play video games for, I mean, that's constant reward, you know, for your brain. But when you're trying to get engaged in something that you're not that interested in, they don't mean to. It's just the way the brain is wired. You know, again, just like when you're in the water and maybe you realize it a little sooner every time, kids can learn to monitor their attention, and catch when they are starting to drift off and how to bring themselves back. But we need to, you know, work with them to teach them those skills.
You know, I love this visual of kind of drifting and that with intentional practice, you can kind of teach yourself or teach, you know, the people around you to kind of stay, but not without stimulation. I mean, I think that that's where you're kind of also getting, like you brought up this idea of, you know, hey, they can pay attention to a video game for 3 hours. Why can't they sit through a 25 minute lesson? They're very different experiences for the body and for the brain. And so for those of you who are listening to say, hey, you know, ADHD isn't really a thing, or my kid doesn't have ADHD because he can pay attention to his video game or his iPad for long, long periods of time, he's not actually paying attention to the iPad in the same way he would pay attention to his teacher. It's not even a comparable experience for their body or their brain. Mm-hmm. So I love kind of reminding folks of that and thinking about other common challenges, right? You mentioned missing things, not capturing the entire lecture, or not being able to sit still, or earlier you kind of mentioned that withdrawal piece a little bit for maybe the teen girl who is inattentive, where she may just kind of seem withdrawn. Are there other common kind of everyday challenges that people may mistake for something else, like you're being a brat or you're just not trying hard enough, like other common everyday things that we see in folks with ADHD?
Yeah, absolutely. So it can, definitely affect relationships, you know, like friendships. If you are maybe doing some things that you're not appropriate for the situation, you know, people, especially kids might, I don't know if I want to be involved in this. Or if you are trying to have a conversation with somebody, you really want to have a conversation with somebody, right? And you like this person and you are interested in what they're saying, but then your mind is drifting off and you're not catching what they're saying. And so they're getting the impression a lot of times that she's really not interested in you know, hearing me. And so those kinds of things tend to affect people socially, you know, as far as executive functioning challenges. You know, it's really, ADHD is a really a disorder of executive functioning, which is why it's so much deeper than what the name implies. So it's affecting their ability to get started on tasks. There's that, you know, we call it a lack of motivation, and it is, but it's not just, it's not the, you know, I say kid just because that's what I'm used to saying within the schools, but adults too. It's not that they don't care about getting started. A lot of times they care very deeply and they want to do this and they want to do it well.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they just don't know where to start. Or maybe it's like a, perfectionism kind of piece where, well, this isn't quite right. And, you know, or I just don't know how to organize the thoughts. So that's another piece, that planning and organization, organizing, you know, their materials, even just yeah. kind of, you know, the basics, making sure that they have everything they need. And then, you know, keeping on track to reach that goal, staying with it long enough to bring it to completion is, you know, a big part of it too. And then looking problem solving, you know, figuring out, okay, what is blocking me from getting started or from being successful in the situation, really being able to think through where that obstacle is and problem solve and come up with different strategies that, you know, you might be able to overcome that obstacle. And thinking of multiple strategies, okay, well, what are the pros and cons of each one? What may be the outcome if I choose this one? And then what if that doesn't work? And really, I think it's important to stress to them that that's not a failure. I mean, that's just the way life works, right? There are plenty of times we all try things and they may or may not work. And if it doesn't work, then what's our next step? You know, how are we going to come back to that? And really just evaluating what we did and maybe what we can do better next time.
All of those examples, I think, are so tangible. And I can imagine folks kind of relating to this issue of, is it a lack of motivation or is it this part of my ADHD that makes it hard for me to get things started because of some of the organization, the planning, the, you know, I think about problem solving for teens or even early adults that, you know, when you can't necessarily slow your brain and organizing your thought process, of course, problem solving is going to be a challenge. You know, you just can't quite see things as clearly as the person whose brain isn't like the person with ADHD. So I love this question that people can ask, or even parents kind of challenging their child or their teen with, you know, what is blocking you? And I think, you know, the last thing I'll say, and then I know you have response to this, but this projects for teens, long papers, those are going to be riddled with challenges for our friends with ADHD, right? I mean, because it's all of those things you just said, all of the executive functions are required to do a project, whether that's for school or for work, writing a paper, you know, that's not just a one-page reflection, although those may be hard too. I think about those things as really tangible pieces where there's arguments between a parent and a teenager because they just won't get their project done. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're not threading it through the right lens, right, Lindsay? I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yes, those long-term things and what we, you know, often hear in this ADHD world, I think it was Ned Halliwell who says the we live in the now or not now. Right. And so when we're talking about a long-term project, that just is not even on the radar.
Yeah.
How big of a grade that is or how much it means to your, you know, productivity at work and, you know, it just is not on the radar. So we can break that up into smaller steps and maybe, you know, even if it's not work might be a little different. Maybe a teacher can, you know, work with you to, you're going to have this part of it due, you know, on this date and this part due on this date and this part due on this date, to break it up and make it a little more manageable. And I do think a lot of our teachers tend to do that anyway, but yes, these long-term projects are really hard. As far as the papers, writing is just something that is just so hard.
It's really hard.
So many students, especially kids with ADHD or any, you know, executive functioning challenges, because these are not just limited to ADHD. You know, a good graphic organizer is helpful and, you know, planning it that way and how you're, you know, what you're going to put in your paper. I will say I have like a kind of mega extreme version of, you know, when you think about, first of all, for organization, how, you know, color coding is super helpful. So organization goes beyond just the materials, but, you know, our thoughts and then our writing, it's so critical. And so this, not everybody's going to need this level of support, but what I have done in the past is color coding those details of the paper. You know, if you have books and printouts, now, first of all, I realize I come from a different generation. I like hard copies. I have actually talked to a lot of students who do prefer hard copies. Yeah. I know a lot of them still prefer things online, you know, whatever works for you. But if you have, you know, if this level of you know, assistance is necessary, like post-its and those tabs, you can mark pages, highlighters, index cards that match those colors. And then I've assigned each detail a color. So as you're going through and finding information that you want to include in your paper, and you can like highlight it or tab it in whatever color, and then you maybe make a note on the index card. And then you have these tangible, you know, little snippets where you can arrange it for those who like things, you know, visually and can manipulate things and lay it out in the order that you want to put your paper. Now, you know, not everybody wants to put that, wants or needs, you know, to do all that. But yeah, a graphic organizer could help a lot of students. A lot of those things we were just talking about, you could do on the computer and, you know, do little post-its on the computer and arrange it that way.
That's so good. Such a tangible, like, because papers are hard for lots of people with or without ADHD, but having some tangible thing.
Especially like when you get into college and you have these major papers that you need to write and you're expected to use, you know, all of these like sources from journals that you have to, you know, keep track of. And
And you're expected to know not just how to do that, but how to organize it and plan it and write it. So it's not just the mechanics of writing, it's the organization of writing that is also really hard.
Right.
Okay. So there's lots of literature out there about ADHD, right? There's lots of people who think lots of things about ADHD. You already kind of mentioned, you know, kind of these two camps about, is it a disorder or is it a superpower? You know, I think there are a lot of people who think a lot of things. Before we started recording, you talked about Russell Barkley, and he has been just such a leading person in our field, particularly around childhood disorders and specifically ADHD. And one of the things that has helped me as a clinician is like so much of his work has been so helpful. And he's got so many videos online. I mean, if you just search up Russell Barkley and ADHD, he's got parent videos, he's got lectures. I mean, he's got so many free resources for folks. But one thing that he has kind of talked about is this issue of ADHD not necessarily being a core problem with either attention or hyperactivity, but a lack of inhibition, right? Like, so I can't stop myself from going to do this. I can't stop myself from saying out loud. I can't stop myself from jumping off the couch. You know, it's not necessarily about hyperactivity or inattention, although some people will still say that. That for me was really kind of revealing of how I could help parents think about their child with ADHD, that it's not that he doesn't want to obey you. It's not that he doesn't want to remember. The rule is don't stand on the furniture. He does want to remember that. He just can't inhibit his natural reaction or his natural response to want to jump off the couch, you know? So I know that you have some things that you have learned about ADHD and particularly from Russell Barkley. Can you share a little bit about what has been a really key piece of information for you in learning about this stuff?
So yes, I did. Because he retired from VCU, which is, you know, right here. And so we were very fortunate that he was willing to do a virtual presentation when we were still, you know, on lockdown during COVID. And it was amazing. So of course he fed us a ton of great information, but what stuck out at me most about his presentation was I remember him, he was speaking so passionately and like almost to the point at times he almost sounded angry that ADHD is not taken seriously enough. You know, anybody who has heard him speak before is probably aware that he has lost two family members, you know, to ADHD. And he was talking a lot about that and, you know, about ADHD in adulthood and how he was the first person I heard call it something like I don't want to, you know, misattribute words, but I know the sentiment was the same and I've heard it from multiple other, you know, experts since then, but something like a debilitating and life-threatening condition. And it was kind of jarring to hear that, but it makes perfect sense. When you think of all the areas that ADHD affects, you know, all those things that we just named, with the planning and goal setting and, you know, thinking about people with ADHD having trouble holding jobs, you know, as they, you know, move forward in life and, you know, maybe not being able to plan and organize to get to doctor's appointments and not, you know, really focusing as much on self-care and, you know, nutrition and exercise and that kind of thing. And they're more likely to use substance abuse. The way I heard it put lately was when your brain is, you know, short on a chemical, it's going to try to seek it out somewhere. Mm. I thought that was interesting too, but when he said those words, it just stuck with me. And I had known, Beth, for years that I had ADHD. I had self-diagnosed myself a long time ago. But I had never, sounds silly coming from somebody in the mental health field, I had never been able to work up the nerve to get evaluated. And that is so common. Yeah. With people who think they have it because they have been fed, just like we've been talking about, you know, thinking all their life, well, I'm just lazy. I'm not motivated enough. I should be working harder. I'm not smart enough, or, you know, all of this stuff. Well, it came to the point where I knew I needed to change doctors. And one of the things, one of the reasons was because once I hit 40 and, you know, you're supposed to have all these screenings and all of this stuff. And I was never good at, you know, following through with, hey, here are a couple of places that you can call. I wasn't great at doing that. And then COVID hit and, you know, put it off even more. Well, I found, of course, through VCU, I realized that, wait a minute, if I go through here, they will handle all of that in-house and they will send the referral to wherever those people will call me. So that was like my healthcare intervention that I put in place for myself. So I went to the first appointment and she was like, you know, I'm really concerned about your blood pressure. And oh, by the way, you're 43, you haven't had a mammogram, you need to go do that, whatever. So she put in those referrals 2 days later. I went to the doctor. You know, he's like, what are your concerns? I said, my blood pressure is high. Okay, what else? And, you know, he was so amazing. I told him about all these other appointments that I had made. And he's like, okay, what else? I said, well, I used to be on medication for anxiety. I would like to go back on there. Okay, what else? I said, well, I would like to explore the possibility of ADHD. Beth, he took that and ran with it. I spent 2.5 hours in his office.
Wow.
While I mean, it was a thorough interview. It was, you know, rating scales. So just the teachers know I can relate. I filled them out.
Yeah, right. You're like, I know all the things.
and then we had this long discussion and I felt so validated.
Mm.
And I left that office with a diagnosis of ADHD and, you know, hypertension and anxiety. And of those three things, the only thing he prescribed medication for at that point was ADHD. Mm. Because he wanted to see how that would affect the other two. So when you think about that impact, you know, he's saying ADHD can cause that high blood pressure and, you know, just this constant state of, I'm afraid I'm going to do everything wrong. And so I left that office feeling so hopeful. 2 weeks later, I went to that mammogram appointment and I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Wow.
And all I kept thinking was a debilitating and life-threatening condition. What if I had not made those appointments when I did? Now I'm fine. You know, it was caught early. I had surgery. It's, you know, clear, but it could have gone another way if I had continued to put off making those decisions. So that was just something that was like a wake up call for me. And at that first appointment, my doctor and I had talked about how, you know, this was, you know, before I knew about the breast cancer, but we were talking about how my experience with ADHD would allow me to further support my students. So once that happened, I thought I really, one of the things that I need to do better is focus on educating not just my students and teachers, but the parents on how this can impact these students long after they leave our school. So that's really, you know, something big that has changed for me since then, just, you know, providing more of that piece and making sure that that's clearly communicated.
Well, first, I love to hear that you're okay. And that you followed that nudge to do what you needed to do to get those appointments taken care of, and that you're a cancer overcomer. That's the right word. I don't know if that's not a right word, but I love that. And I think there are probably listeners who can relate to this idea of it being debilitating and life-threatening, certainly debilitating, right? Mm-hmm. And I know I've been in conversations with families where, you know, one of the symptoms in their child did cause it to be life-threatening. So it's so powerful for folks to hear about your story and this new take on some of these symptoms, right? Because I know I have been in countless conversations with parents of kids with ADHD who are exhausted and frustrated, yes, and frankly, kind of angry and maybe sad and a whole slew of things because they don't have that frame of it being debilitating and life-threatening and perhaps lifelong, right? So I think they feel like, gosh, why am I so tired? Why is this such a big deal? Because this common idea that most people have about ADHD is that, well, it's just something that little kids have and it's not that big of a deal. So right. I actually love that Russell Barkley is getting pissed off at, you know, workshops trying to get people to be fired up about this being, you know, perhaps a crisis in our mental health world.
Yeah. And there is a, you know, I don't know, or I don't pretend to know what's going on in the medical community, but I do know that there is this push now really to educate primary care physicians, pediatricians on this, because it's often misdiagnosed as, you know, anxiety, depression, whatever, which, you know, certainly
could be.
It can be. Again, yeah, you go through life with all this, you know, these negative thoughts, and it can be, but without the knowledge of the ADHD, they're not getting at the root of the problem so many times.
You know, it's the knowledge of what ADHD is in our DSM, right? In our book and whatever the medical providers use to make their diagnosis. But I think it's beyond that. It's also what we're saying here is to look at the severity of functioning as well. So, I love this conversation for that, to remind folks that ADHD is not just a checklist of symptoms. It really is an every day, your whole day condition that makes it challenging to engage in the world as it is now, right? I mean, I think that's, you know, one of the newer ways of thinking about things is not from a deficit model, but from a neurodivergent model, right? Where we're not saying, hey, Lindsay, what's wrong with you? Why can't you, you know, adjust your body to the work environment? It's like, well, maybe the work environment isn't made for everyone. Maybe the way we do everything in life isn't made for everyone. And so maybe we need to think about this a little differently.
Yes, I agree. And just because you were talking about the, criteria checklist, just considering that those are things that people can see. Mm. And all of the other things, so many of these other pieces to it are not obvious to, you know, just anybody.
They're not things we talk about, right? So this person who has all of these invisible symptoms, unless we ask specifically about these invisible symptoms, the person sits in silence, not knowing that that's not normal.
Yes, that's such a big piece, is that they don't know that it's not normal. But what we're hearing now too is that ADHD is so underdiagnosed, just as the criteria are right now, but the criteria right now isn't necessarily thought to be capturing everybody. Mm. So there's like this push to change some of that. I don't know when or if that might happen. That's, you know, certainly not my area, but it is something that I am interested in following. But yeah, I think that our society is going to be forced to make some changes, you know, as more and more people are diagnosed. But also I think that is part of what contributes to that myth of ADHD and, you know, just using it as an excuse and, you know, well, it's people think it's overdiagnosed, and that's just not at all the case.
Well, we might be diagnosing it in a way that someone might see as overdiagnosing it, but we're not capturing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the truth. We're not capturing the realness of what ADHD is.
Yeah. I think we have to remember too, that when it comes to people of color, particularly Black students, are more likely to be underdiagnosed. You know, and maybe diagnosed as like ODD, instead mm-hmm. of ADHD. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. that too is important. It's something important to keep in mind.
Yeah. That's so good. I mean, we have so many things that we could continue mm-hmm. talking about today. but for the sake of kind of this episode, I'm just so thankful for the work that you do. Both the work in the schools and you know, the ways that you are continuing to push this specific issue forward in our field is just so critical. And so I thank you for coming here and sharing your story, but also just the work you do every day to bring light to this, because it's just so important. So thanks for saying yes to being here and for all the work you do.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And I just love following all the things that you do too. And I am so thankful for, all the advocating you do for educators. I appreciate everything you're doing.
Well, thanks for saying that. It feels like a small part compared to, you know, the sacrifices that our educators and people like you in the building are putting in for the next generation. So for all you do as well. So, all right. Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening, y'all. And we will just catch you the next time.